Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast from The Sober Club. I'm Genuinely Grace, and this is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. We'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there's inspiration from quitlet authors, experts, and sober heroes. Hi and welcome. How are you doing this week? I've had a fantastic week, actually, because, of course, we had our Champneys wellbeing break. And it was just great. Really lovely to meet up with like-minded people in that lovely space. And though I say so myself, it rocked, actually. Got some lovely feedback. So it was just a great event to do that there. Self-care in sobriety at Champneys. So thanks to those of you who came along. We were a very small group, but it was great. And hopefully we'll do some more. And of course, I've just launched my next retreat, which is going to be in Suffolk, 8th to 10th of May. So check that out on the events page at the Sober Club. But also this week, I say I've had a great week. Actually, I had some also unbelievably upsetting news. I learned that someone who was a very big part of my life many years ago died. And it was such a shock, really unbelievable shock. So I had a kind of, 24 hours of just reeling, really, just absolutely reeling. And it was sort of interesting. It made me really remember again, kind of all those old emotions, you know, in the old days when if something bad happened like that, something that really knocks you for six, you know, I'd have just reached for the booze. You know, to numb the feelings out and to just make the pain go away. But that, wasn't an option. And in fact, I must say, I'm thrilled to say that it didn't even cross my mind. There's absolutely no way that the answer to anything lies in a bottle. But I did have to put in place some of my own shtick, if you like. I'm always talking about self-care and you know, just remembering that this too shall pass. And I had to put some of that in place for myself, and I'm pleased to say I was able to do that. But you know, it doesn't take away the absolute sadness. But sometimes when you have a massive thing like that happen in your life, it helps you get things back in perspective again. If you were drifting off, it really helps you kind of really look at what's important to you, you know. And so I feel as though I've been able to do that this week. So I had the kind of high of being at Champneys and then the horrendous low of hearing of this friend's passing. I hadn't seen him for many, many years, but nevertheless, a very important part of my life some years ago. So, kind of these highs and lows are part of our lives, aren't they? And there's been quite a few challenges on the Sober Club on our Facebook group this week. You know, people sort of feeling, oh my goodness, what's going on? I want to hit the fuck it button. I've had enough. Isn't it the week of Blue Monday? I think Monday, 20th of Jan is in the UK, allegedly Blue Monday, isn't it? So not that we have to make it blue by any means, but I think there can be, our expectations are often just so high, particularly if you are doing Dry January or you're ditching the cigarettes or whatever you're trying to change, whatever behaviour you're trying to change. Most of us go in all great guns blazing and fully expect to be completely changed within a couple of days, certainly a couple of weeks. And it really isn't like that. It takes some time. And then, of course, once we do settle into this new who we are kind of thing, other stuff starts to appear. I've often spoken of layers that we need to uncover. And if there are cracks, if there are areas of your life that aren't, you know, exactly how you want them to be, then suddenly you're going to see those cracks in the cold light of day. You're going to actually see them for what they are. And whereas in the past, we would have just opened a bottle to deal with it, we can't do that. So, you know, it's complex, this stuff. It can be really complex. I also did a talk on Tuesday night at Home House. It was the one on their kind of mind, body, soul program. Just shared a kind of version of my TEDx talk, Sobriety Rocks. And it was great, actually, to speak to an audience who were there to hear a whole bunch of talks about well-being. sometimes it's amazing to me that I can do this, really. First sort of year, I couldn't have spoken about it. But I felt too raw, too nervous. But, well, now I don't have an issue, as you can tell. I will get to what's on the podcast, by the way. I'm going to be speaking with Darren Taylor, one of the Sober Club members. I think it's great to hear people's stories, and Darren's got an interesting sober story to share. And then I've got a short interview. I've kept it really short, but I'm going to be speaking with Michelle Kay, who is a nutritionist and a dance teacher. And Michelle and I are actually going to do an event together all around detoxing and juicing. So I thought it'd be nice to have a chat with Michelle as well. So if you want a few tips around how you can boost your immunity, you know, again, if you're doing dry January, if you've already been sober for ages, whatever stage you're at during these winter months, it's just always a great idea to get some nutrition straight to your cells. And then I also must tell you before I forget, the really exciting news that I am Annie Grace's guest this week on This Naked Mind. So you can hear my story on Annie Grace's podcast, This Naked Mind. It was great to have a chat with her. Of course, I interviewed her a few months ago, and she interviewed me. So, yeah, sharing the love. So that was really great. Obviously, depending on when you're listening to this, it's the Mindful Drinking Festival this weekend, 18th and 19th at the Truman Brewery in London. It's going to be great. They've got so many great seminars and things lined up. I'm speaking on self-care on Saturday at 1:15, and I'm hosting a panel on sober holidays and retreats on Sunday morning. So it'd be fantastic to meet some podcast listeners there. Really looking forward to that. I'm just going to tell you a couple of things I noticed in the news this week. There was a piece about young people reaping the rewards, it says, of a generational swing away from drugs, drink and casual sex. So they're talking here about how a lot more young people are choosing, many more young people are choosing not to drink and take drugs, which is all fantastic. And then juxtaposed against that was this piece that I noticed in the Times, and the title of the piece was "Let the Wine Flow Again, Urges Michelin Master." And it says here, Michelin-starred chef has said that diners should drink wine by the bottle, not the glass, and has slashed prices to encourage them to do this. So we're talking about this chef called Alain Ducasse, who's the head of a culinary empire that includes apparently his restaurant at the Dorchester Hotel in London. He's halved the price of wines that normally sell for, you know, small fortune to encourage people to buy a bottle rather than a glass. Well, shame on you, Alan. How daft. Someone should send Alan a copy of this great new book by Professor David Nutt. It's called Drink, the New Science of Alcohol and Your Health. I'm going to be interviewing Professor David Nutt on the show. He's had a lot of airtime this week. He's caused a bit of a furore because he's kind of mooted the idea that that really alcohol really is the number one drug. And of course, it's not something that we like to hear. We really do not like to hear that. we like to think that all the other drugs are the worst. But as it says on the back of this book, David Nutt looks at the science of alcohol in our health in a groundbreaking exploration. And it says here, as the most harmful drug in the UK, alcohol has a profound and wide-reaching impact on our health and our society at large. And Drink is the first book of its kind written by a scientist and rooted in 40 years of medical research and hands-on experience treating patients. He cuts through the noise to explain its long and short-term effects, making complex science digestible. So this is one of those books that I really do think everybody should read. Now, interesting, I haven't gotten to the end of it yet, and I'm going to be interviewing David on the podcast. He really tells it like it is, this book. It really does explain exactly what it does to us. So this is one of those books that I recommend that people read. I always say I always think you need both the kind of inspiring stuff, the motivational stuff, such as the memoirs and the and the lifestyle-y kind of books. And then you also need the more factual stuff, the Alan Carr, the William Porter, the Jason Vale. But this is kind of something else because, you know, it is written by a scientist and a medical practitioner. So he really comes from a place of gravitas, I suppose you could say. Talks about how drinking affects the body and the brain and the harmful effects. He very much talks about what alcohol does to your mental health and affects the quality of your life. He talks about children and alcohol, social aspects of it, an addiction generally. But what's really interesting, and as I say, I haven't got to the end of it yet, but what is interesting is at the beginning of the book, in the preface, he does say, I don't have the actual piece in front of me, so don't quote me word for word, but he says something like, I'm just trying to find it as I flick through the book. Should have had that prep, shouldn't I? He says words to the effect of, he says something like, you know, am I totally against drinking? No, I have both the good and bad of alcohol. Oh, here we go. I found it now. I don't need to guess. He says, yet also with one of my daughters, I own a wine bar in London. My life encapsulates the good and bad of alcohol and pulls together my knowledge, experience and ideas. So, wow. I'm fascinated by that. Fascinated to interview him and find out how he can write a book like this about alcohol being the number one most harmful drug and own a wine bar. But we'll find out in due course. I guess there's you know, always lots of different sides to every story. Let's hear Darren's story. And then after this, as I say, I'm going to talk with Michelle Kay. And we're going to just talk kind of generally a little bit about detox and how we can get the good stuff into our bodies. Because when you stop drinking, whether you're a few days in, a few months or even years, chances are that you've already started thinking, how can I feel better? And as we know, you are what you eat. So let's hear Darren first.
Hi and welcome. My guest is Darren Taylor. Now, I met Darren when he popped up to one of our events. I think I was interviewing Claire Pooley. It was lovely to meet a podcast listener. And I thought, you know, let's share Darren's story. He's got some interesting stuff going on. So Darren, just tell us a little bit about what you're doing now, and then we'll kind of back up and hear your story.
Sure. Well, you know, thanks for having me on, firstly. And for me, it's quite interesting because, you know, I'm 8 months in to my sobriety now, and I've found that through the medium of Instagram and a website which I've set up called the Uni of Everyday Life, it's taking something away from the concerns that I had, maybe of not a relapse as such, but, you know, to start drinking again. And it's given me a new focus, and the whole sobriety at the minute is, you know, it's a massive thing, as you well know. So to be involved in that is great. And it's taking up, you know, quite a lot of my thought space, but in a good way, I suppose.
So it's almost by being involved more, it's keeping you on track. Yeah, I think that's really true.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't want to get ahead, but I've had a 4.5 year probable, what I would call a whirlwind, with ups and downs and stopping and starting drinking.
Well, let's talk about that. I mean, we'll talk more about your website in a while, but let's talk about your drinking career then. What was it like for you, and what was the sort of catalyst for making the changes?
Well, the catalyst really was quite a few mistakes along the way. You know, when you have a drinking career which has probably lasted, I would say, 25 years, you know, at the end of it, it's going to come to a head. Now, for me, I think, you know, it was normalized when I was younger. You know, I had two older brothers that were 10 and 12 years older than me. And, you know, they were going out and drinking. My dad always went to the pub on a Saturday without fail. Yeah. And, you know, it was normalized. And then as I grew, you know, I became just within that culture, I guess. And my job, you know, at the time was such that I was traveling here, there and everywhere with a lifestyle on expenses. And, you know, I don't mind admitting that there's an element of it went to my head and the ego took over and, you know, the demon pulling the strings as he does. Then I was on the road to breakdown, to be quite honest.
Mm. So the drinking really ramped up when you were sort of travelling and it was part of your work as well?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it was part of my work. It was entertaining people, you know, and being away from home. So I was living one life while I was working away from home. You know, I'd get up at stupid o'clock on a Monday and it would be maybe the Thursday, Friday, or even the Saturday afterwards when I would come home, you know, to my family who, you know, my wife had the two kids for the week. She could do with a break. The kids wanted my attention and I was absolutely shattered. So
yeah.
It, you know, it got to where I was thinking, oh my God, I want to be away again. Mm. And that was because it just got too much and it was a different life. So
something. And when did you, you know, when did you decide that something needs to change? And what were your thoughts at that time about how you might go about making those changes? What did you feel the options were for you at the time?
Well, in 2014 is when it probably came to a head, and I thought, well, stupidly, you know, I just need to cut down on my drinking. I'll cut down and everything will be okay. So I tried that, and you know, inevitably it just got worse again.
Yeah.
And over the next 4 years, actually, it did get worse with the secret drinking. You know, that snuck its way into my life, and it was that 4 year period between 2014 and 2018 where, you know, alcohol really got a grip, and I had several periods of abstinence where, you know, I thought, yeah, I'll take a period of abstinence. And it's strange, but there was no real want or desire. Mm. You know, I wanted to stop just to please everybody, really. But, you know, a culmination of events where, you know, I would have a binge, you know, and I'd burn a candle and things like that led me to think, right, this, you know, this has really got to stop.
Right. But what I'm interested in is what you felt were your options for stopping then. I mean, a lot of people sort of, certainly back then, there wasn't the same kind of level of community that there is now. So at the time, did you think of going to Alcoholics Anonymous? Perhaps you did go. Did you see your GP? You know, what were your, in your mind, what were your options and when did you start to make the change and how?
Yeah, the main option, as I saw it, you know, I knew I needed to stop drinking, basically. As much as I tried to hang on to cutting down, I had to stop. I mean, that was it. I did go to the doctor, and it took me until 2017, where I went to a local help centre. It was called Step Forward. It was a strange situation because I went there and it didn't do anything for me, really. So inevitably, it didn't get any worse. I tried counselling with a few different people, and you know, I can remember coming out of one counsellor and drinking a bottle of wine after I'd been, you know, been in there to see them, which obviously
not ideal, is it?
It's not ideal, no, definitely.
No.
But well, then eventually I met a lovely lady who was into NLP, the neuro-linguistic programming, and she helped me come to terms with my emotions, with the inside, because for me, it was obvious that there was a lot of things that had gone on from the death of my mum to various things which I'd not dealt with. And it was understanding that. In addition to that, I did go to Alcoholics Anonymous, but I tried the online version.
All right. I didn't know there was one.
There's a whole Skype international community that you can use, And it really did help. But it got to a point where, having gone through some of the steps, I really realised that it wasn't for me. And that was mainly because of the, you know, they say that there's not a religious side to it. And I know AA has done wondrous things for lots and lots of people.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, I will never ever knock what it's done for me. Because it gave me a basis. But it just wasn't for me. I know there's a few people of the same, you know, have said the same thing. I probably drifted away from that in probably April, May
Yeah.
And then I found the Instagram community, because before that I'd never, you know, I'd always shied away from social media. I've never really wanted to do it. So it was quite an eye opener to see the amount of people that's going through either the same thing or, you know, at varying levels, and the support that you can get from that just by, you know, just by reading people's comments and looking at, you know, the different photographs, and then it moves on to listening to, you know, your podcast and the Sober Club and all these wonderful things that I never knew existed.
I know. So, that's the amazing thing, isn't it? It's fun. It's when you suddenly realise that there's a joy in sobriety. It doesn't have to be miserable.
And it definitely doesn't, because, you know, in the last few months, my whole thought process has changed so much. I mean, yes, it is difficult. You know, the first 30 days and all that is horrendous, to be honest. You know, depending who you are. I mean, I had a few attempts. The last one being different, because I don't know what it was. It's really, really hard to explain, but it's almost as if I realised that I must have a guardian angel watching me to be here.
Really?
And also, and, you know, for some of the just stupid things that I've done, I could have lost my job. I could have easily lost my marriage. And I haven't done. And it was almost after the last, let's call it mistake or binge or whatever, you know, I could have lost my job. And I thought, I wasn't feeling the guilt as much. Yes, I was remorseful, but I felt, wow, that was just a learning experience. You really now cannot and do not want to drink again.
Yeah.
And it was almost as if something in my brain had said, yeah, I don't want to drink anymore. I just don't want to. And that's it. And it took me a long time, you know, and I learned the hard way. But my God, I'm glad I did.
That is really the kind of light bulb moment, isn't it? When you realize that you actually don't desire to drink again. It's a real light bulb. It was for me. I mean, because in the beginning, you know, I always find it difficult to say to people that never say never thing, that, oh, is it forever? It's very difficult to kind of decide that you're going to quit forever when you're in it, when you're involved in it all. It's so difficult because you're in your mind, you can't see a life beyond alcohol. And so for most people, you have to kind of start small. You do have to do the one day at a time thing, you know, do your challenge or whatever. And that's why I always say to people, don't do a dry January or a go sober for October and then drink at the end of it. Just please give yourself longer than that. But then once you've broken through and you suddenly catch sight of, hold on a minute, I don't actually desire a drink. That's massive, isn't it, that feeling?
It's immense. And, you know, I think that's what failed me the times before, because, you know, I still wanted to drink, but I felt I couldn't. That's it, you know. And I felt I couldn't, because, you know, my family is everything to me, and I was going to lose that if I did. And I was using that, you know, not as a mask, but I wasn't using it as an excuse, but I wasn't getting it clear in my own in my own mind. And then once you have that moment, like you say, and then you start suddenly thinking, oh my God, I can do this, I can do that.
What do you think was the main difference this time then? What was the key to you getting to that point where it was no longer a chore and a misery to have to stay sober? It was actually your choice. Do you think it was the connection with the community and connecting with other people and catching sight of a different life? What was that, the kind of key factor for you?
Yeah, it's a multitude of things, really. I think, yes, you know, everything you've said there, you know, certainly the understanding of the sober community that's out there and the fact that you're not alone, you know, you're definitely not alone. Obviously, people are at different levels. You know, understanding the real reason that I wanted to stop for my family and that desire to want to stop. And then that, you know, over the previous 4 years, it's as though everything came together at once, you know, from the thought process with the NLP techniques. You know, I was more open about it in the latter periods to people and saying, look, I am stopping drinking. You know, instead of saying to people, you know, I'll be round and, you know, we're going for dinner at so-and-so's house this evening, I'd go around and it'd drive me insane, because, you know, everybody else was having a glass of wine, and under normal circumstances, you know, I would have well, definitely have had more than anybody else. Mm. But, you know, just saying to people, do you know what? I'm done with drinking. Mm. And you might not see me for a while because I'm going to get my head together and I'm going to absolutely, you know, I'm going to nail this. Yeah. And it's something that I want to do, you know.
For you.
And I think I posted on Instagram the other day because my wife had said to me, oh, we don't see, X and Y anymore. And she says, do you think it's because you don't drink? And I said, do you know what? I don't really care.
Yeah.
If that's the case.
Well, it's really true. Relationships.
Bye-bye.
You know, relationships do go by the wayside sometimes and it's the way it is. It's absolutely true. I'm really interested in the fact that you... You worked with a NLP practitioner, neuro-linguistic programming, as you say, and you know, I'm a really big fan, if you like, of lots of these techniques. To what extent do you think it was important for you to, if you like, address some of the root causes of why you ended up in that place? Was that a big part of it, do you think? You know, I'm just really interested in your experience of using that sort of therapy in inverted commas to enable you to face stuff, really. That's what it is, isn't it? Because when you're just drinking all the time, you're numbing out. We've all got stuff going on in our head or maybe it's in our subconscious mind or stuff in the past. We've all got a ton of baggage. And mostly over the years, we've just become really good at just numbing it all with booze. So how important was it for you to address some of that with NLP? Maybe you could just describe some of the... you know, how it worked for you or some of the benefits, part of the experience.
Yeah. I could probably explain that maybe with an analogy. Mm. And, you know, if you think of an iceberg, well, you know, you see this bit shining on the surface and that's the bit that everybody thinks is wonderful and it's fine. But 90% of it is underneath the surface.
Yeah.
As many seafaring goer will tell you, you know, it's that bit that you need to be careful of.
Yeah,
because it's that bit that can lead you to catastrophe.
Sure.
And I was a bit like that. So I had all these emotions that were under the surface, yet on the outside I was all you know, magical and fine and everything's great.
Yeah.
What the NLP did was, you know, it takes you into that, but it just changes your thought process and makes you think about things more positive.
Yeah.
You know, there's various techniques. You know, that you can use from anchoring and things like that, which is great, incidentally, for cravings. Mm. So for anybody that doesn't know, anchoring can be, you know, a part of you. I've actually got a bracelet which my wife gave me, and it's something that, you know, if I ever feel down, I can hold that, and it's almost as if it takes
sort of
me
little,
back to my into my bubble. I'm often referring to being in my sober bubble. I quite like my sober
So it's almost
bubble.
Like a little, when you say, it's like a little reminder, a little token, if you like, something that takes you straight back to the image you've created or the feeling that you want to have, rather than allowing your mind to go off on its own trip.
Yeah, absolutely. And it just gives you that little bit of focus to say, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And you know, and then for me anyway, is a knock-on effect to all other positive vibes and other positive thoughts that goes into my head. So I guess to answer your question in a couple of words or three is, it was imperative for me to do that. And I think if I hadn't have understood them little bits between the surface, then I would likely have, you know, maybe still been battling today, who knows.
Mm. Yeah. It's really true. And I think that... you know, as we say a lot, I say this a lot, but just because you've ditched the booze doesn't mean that you won't have stuff thrown at you, that crap still won't happen, you know, it's not magic. It's not a magic bullet for everything to be perfect in your life. It also doesn't change the fact that you might have had really difficult stuff in your past, and there may be trauma. And just by stopping the booze doesn't take the trauma away from the past, and it doesn't stop the crap from happening in the future, sadly.
Absolutely not. No,
however, what it can do is, you know, as you've proven here, is helps you to be able to face some of that stuff in the past,
And reframe it is not quite the right word, but as you say, see it with perhaps a different perspective so that you can, you know, take it on, embrace it. It is what it is, and move forward. And then moving forward, it's about, all about the resilience, isn't it? And I'm guessing that you, well, tell me some of the benefits you feel now. I'm guessing feeling stronger and resilient is one of them.
Absolutely. It's, you know, stronger, resilient, more alive. I wouldn't say that, you know, I've got more common sense. I mean, I am a man after all, and apparently I'm told that I ain't got that much common sense. But
you have started the uni of life, so I think you've got a fair bit of common sense. You've got you know, you've been to the University of Life, haven't you?
Yeah, I have, and it's a wild
one way or another.
I can tell you. Yeah, absolutely. But no, I mean, the benefits are just immense. I mean, personal benefits, obviously, but I mean, my children are, I've got an 8-year-old girl and a 12-year-old old boy. And, you know, I find so much pleasure just picking my little girl up from school.
I know. Being present for your kids is massive, isn't it?
Yeah.
Massive.
And I can't express that enough, just that feeling of that family and that connection that I'd overlooked for years whilst I was living, doing this, you know, side playing job and all this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so easy to overlook it. And I know people that's done it. And I know a lot of people that's ended up divorced and done things. So, you know, I'm grateful that, you know, throughout the years I've had some ups and downs, but I've managed to come out the other end, and I'm so pleased for that.
Yeah.
But mainly it's the family, you know, the sleeping, the just everyday life.
Yeah.
It really is.
And it must be great that you must have sort of made an impact amongst some of your colleagues and friends, you know, some of the ones that have stuck around. You know, do you find that you kind of end up, and I know that you've got your website now and you're writing blogs and stuff, but even before that, I'm guessing you find that you, almost whether you want to or not, you're shining a little bit of a light out there, and people will notice that, won't they? I mean, I guess, as you say, some friends fall away, but others, I'm guessing, kind of come to you and go, well, actually, Darren, I've got a bit of a problem. You know, tell me how you did it.
Yeah. Do you know what? I have as well. Mm. And, you know, they all say, how do you do it? And I say, well, it's hard work, mate. You've got to put it in. But yeah, the people that have come along to me and said, you know, I really, really respect what you're doing. It's amazing. And in this society that we're in, it's pushed down our neck so much, and it's really rammed in our face. And, you know, you mentioned the dry January, and, you know, it's all a big thing. Yeah, dry January, but a week into it, everybody's planning a big big bender at the end of it, and it's like, well, what's the point in doing dry January, you know? And a lot of my friends are in that society thing, and you know, they always want to ask questions, and they're always really supportive. And I'm never going to say to anybody, you know, you shouldn't drink, you know, it's your choice at the end of the day. But what I will say is there's a whole world outside of there which you just do not need it.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell us a bit about your website. I mean, obviously it's an intriguing name, your blog. What are you kind of trying, you know, what do you want to share with that blog? And is it something that just sort of came about almost organically? I mean, one of the things I with the Sober Club, I'm always encouraging people to write, not necessarily to publish, but just to write, because there's something amazing about just getting your thoughts down. And obviously you took it, you know, one stage further.
Yeah, it was actually. I was messing around on Google one day, and it was at the time where I was coming away from, you know, the AA connection.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I mean, I've always liked to write, and I've always found, you know, writing down my thoughts helps me and things like that. And I thought maybe I should do a blog. And it did. It was just natural. So I looked up some different domain names. And I thought, well, you know, what is it that I, you know, what have I learned over the things I've learned from the University of Life? I wonder if that domain name's available.
Yeah.
And, you know, to my amazing surprise, the Uni of Life was.
Amazing.
And I thought, oh, so I'm.
So it's meant to be
no
for
idea.
You.
Yeah. And do you know,
it really is no meant idea, to be.
No idea what I was going to do with it at all. And I just thought, I'm going to buy it. So I
bought it. That's fantastic.
And it sat there for 2 months until I really thought about it. I thought, yeah, I'm going to do this. I want to give something back and I want to encourage others. And, you know, I just share my story because if I can share that and it helps one person in the situation that I've been in, then, you know, I've succeeded.
Yeah. So what's next for you then, you know, Darren? What else would you like to kind of do in this kind of scene, if you like?
Just carry on, just keeping on, really. And along with the website and more connections with people, that's all I can do. I'd love to be able to, you know, to take it to the masses. And just watch it grow. You know, I want to be part of the, it sounds like we're going back to the 70s or something, but I want to be part of the revolution.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
And that's what I feel like it is. I mean, these days.
Well, it is. It is a sober revolution. Yeah, it really, really is.
It is. It is. And I see the kids of these days as well. When I say the kids, I'm talking, you know, the 1920s. You know, they're not going through that drinking culture that we had.
There's a lot of millennials.
On health.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, also, I think they're, you know, an awful lot of younger people realize what a ridiculous waste of money it is. Waste of money and time.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Wow. Yeah. Amazing. So, just give us your website then, and where people can find your blog.
Yeah, my website is theunioflife.com. And it's called the University of Everyday Life, but unfortunately that domain wasn't available.
I think it sums it up fine. Yeah.
Brilliant. I mean, I've also got the Instagram, which I've been on a few months now, and that's variety_n_sobriety. So I try and mix it up a little bit on there. And
cool.
So thank you
so much for being a guest, Darren. I really appreciate it. So I love these inspirational stories, and I love the work that you're doing. And there'll be so many, you know, people who will just be really, I don't know, encouraged and cheered by, you know, by hearing that story. It's great. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you sharing it with us.
You're very welcome. And I'd just like to say to people, you know, if anybody does listen to this, which I hope they do, you know, just don't stop. If you're struggling, don't stop, reach out. There's help out there, whether that's me or somebody else. You know, I don't care. Just keep it real and all the best.
Cheers, Darren. Thank you.
Thanks, Janie.
Sober Club member Darren Taylor. And as promised, I spoke with Michelle Kay, talking detox.
So I'm speaking with Michelle Kay. Michelle, it's so lovely to actually record a bit of a podcast with somebody next to me. Very unusual.
It's great.
Michelle, just tell us a bit about your background, because you are an amazing Nia dance teacher, but we're actually going to leave that for another time.
Thank you.
We are definitely going to talk about dance, because I really want to talk about the amazing benefits of dance. But for now, we're kind of talking detox and juicing and health and well-being. So just share a little bit about your background.
Sure. So I started off with a degree in physiology and biochemistry, and then I went on to do a master's in nutrition. I taught biology for several years, and I stopped to have children. But I never ceased reading and studying, because I'm fascinated by the human body and how to stay well as we get older.
Yeah, exactly. And your book, Eat, Dance, Shine, very much sort of teaches us about longevity and as you say, it's not just about getting old, it's about being well as you age.
Absolutely.
Totally. So let's talk detox then, because obviously this is the time of year when a lot of people have decided that it's a good time to or ditch the booze, obviously, with dry January, a lot of people giving up various things and lots of people doing detoxes. But for you then, what does the word detox mean, and why is it important that we treat ourselves to some form of detox?
Well, we live in a very polluted world, and we breathe in toxins, we drink them in our drinking water, and then if our food is not optimum, for example, it's not organic, which is impossible to do 100% of the time, then we are taking in pesticides and herbicides, not to mention GMOs. So we have, our bodies are toxic, and this is the yummy time of year to sort of ride on the wave of being motivated by January detox, February detox, that sort of thing. So I just think it's a great time to get carried along with the enthusiasm and motivation to do it now. Mm. Actually, it's ideal to sort of detox as you go along, because we once a year is not enough.
Yeah, I mean, I know there are medical professionals who say that all of this is absolute nonsense, of course, and I've read many times medical professionals saying that there's absolutely no need whatsoever for any of us to detox in any way, because our bodies do that naturally. What's your response to that?
Well, it looks to me like they're in denial.
Because, without swearing.
Yeah, and also, you know, they had very little nutritional training.
Well, yeah, that's true.
And then also dentists feel fine about using mercury amalgams. So, and there's so much evidence that shows that the mercury does leak into the rest of the body and into the brain. So I would say that they are in denial.
Mm, yeah. So let's just talk about juicing and smoothies particularly. We're going to do our little workshop together, and if for anyone who's in Hertfordshire in the UK. But I've been in my sober club, I've been doing a little juice challenge. It's been great fun because we've just been looking at juice shots and introducing people to the benefits of juicing, and sort of touching on smoothies. But what would you say are the benefits of juices and smoothies? I mean, I know it's a subject for a whole hour long kind of podcast and workshop, but, you know, in a nutshell, why do you feel this is a great way of getting the nutrients in?
Well, the majority of nutritionists around the world would agree that we need to eat more plants and move towards a plant-based diet to alkalize our bodies, to slow down the inflammation, or we can call it inflammaging as we get older. It's a wonderful term.
Yeah, that's a great word.
So it's a very simple way of absorbing large amounts of nutrients.
Yeah, I often say, on that note, actually, I often say to people, rather than worrying about what you're not going to eat, you know, worrying about, oh, I can't have this and I can't have that, just actually add in. It's think about what you're adding in. And particularly for people who are ditching the booze, while they're sitting there kind of craving the alcohol that they would normally go for, that would normally reach for it. Actually, if you have a power-packed smoothie, you haven't even got room for the alcohol, let alone craving it. Because nobody fancies a drink of some toxic stuff after they've had a really fresh, amazing juice, do
they? That's such a great point. And you can make juices and smoothies so delicious, and, you know, really fill that gap, a feel good drink.
Yeah.
So it's, I call it the ultimate fast food.
Yeah.
Because it's quick to make, it's quick to clean up, it's easy to digest and absorb, it's very assimilated in the body, and it's just the ultimate fast food.
Mm, yeah. There's a blog post on soberclub.com about, called The Lowdown on Juicing, where I've got a whole load of information, and you can look at the various different sort of juices and blenders to buy. So we won't get into all of that now, but could you give us an example maybe of one really nice, fairly simple recipe that would be really good, particularly for people, well, for anyone, but particularly if we want to replace some of those nutrients because we've stopped drinking and we know that everything is recalibrating?
Yeah, sure. There's a very nice detox smoothie that I enjoy making several times a week. I use blueberries and bananas and a good handful of coriander. If you don't like coriander, you can replace it with rocket or watercress or any other soft greens. Add to that a teaspoon of spirulina and either orange juice or water to blend. And it's really delicious and highly nutritious, and it will draw some toxins out of the body.
Amazing. So all we'd need for that one is actually a blender then. You wouldn't even need a juicer. You could
exactly.
Just use a blender for that.
Yes.
And I guess we could replace orange juice with coconut water or
yes.
Whatever you like, I guess.
Absolutely.
To taste. And presumably it comes out a nice rich greeny blue, does it, if you've added spirulina?
Well, yeah, the blueberries create quite a purple colour, and then it gets slightly modified by the spirulina, but it is a really strong colour.
And why is that one good for us then?
Well, the blueberries are very good for the brain, and the coriander and the spirulina will draw heavy metals out of the brain, so you start to feel more clear-headed.
Mm.
Yeah, amazing. And then, so what would you say then for anyone who's kind of thinking, I want to sort of introduce some of this into my life? What's your kind of top tip for getting started?
Well, I would say take one day at a time and just promise yourself that during that day, you're going to make one of these smoothies for yourself as a treat.
Yeah.
And put it in your diary. Tell someone that you're going to do it. Invite a friend to do it with you. Mm. Get on the phone and say, I'm making mine now. Have you made yours yet?
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
Just do it with somebody. That often helps. And just start by tasting it. And then, you know, pretty soon you'll be wanting one.
Mm, exactly. And on our event that we're going to do together then on February the 4th, I know when I first got into juicing, I'd sort of read about it and I'd bought a juicer. I didn't quite know what to do with it. And it wasn't until I was on a Jason Vale workshop. But it wasn't until I actually watched Jason physically put chunks of stuff and like hold in his hand a whole small apple and a chunk of broccoli and then cut the broccoli stalk and then, you know, watched him kind of physically put that through the juicer and then watched him pour some of the juice into the blender and add other stuff. When I'd seen it, I suddenly got it.
Yes.
So I'm guessing that's what we're going to do, right?
Absolutely. I lead several workshops a year and I'm always making juices and smoothies for people and we discuss the benefits, what's the difference between a juice and a smoothie, what sort of machines are ideal. I mean, it's obviously too much to go into here, but it is great to get yourself to a workshop where you actually see it happening, as you say.
It's just actually trying it. When you actually do it and you can see the quantities and also it's not an exact science.
That's what I love about it, that you can really adapt it for what you have and also the amounts and adapt it for taste.
Yeah, exactly. So we can find more about your work at michellek.com.
Exactly.
And I'll give more details out about the event. Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you, Janie.
So if you're close enough to London or Hertfordshire, check out the event that I'm going to do with Michelle on February the 4th, Tuesday evening, 7 o'clock. We've just found a funky little coffee shop in a place called King's Langley in Hertfordshire. It's about 25 minutes from London on the train. Very limited tickets, obviously, because it's tiny. And we're going to actually do a little juicing demo, talking about juices and smoothies. When I first kind of found out about juicing and heard of the whole concept of packing all this stuff into a glass, you know, all the greens that you can't possibly eat enough of, I kind of couldn't get my head around it really until I watched Jason Vale on a juicing workshop. And suddenly I got it. I suddenly understood exactly how you do it. So we're going to be doing a little bit of that and sharing favourite recipes and sharing some of the science behind it. Michelle is a nutritionist. And obviously I'm going to be talking about getting the buzz without the booze. So this is perfect for you, whatever stage you're at. Doesn't matter if you've stopped drinking or you're thinking of it or if you've been sober for ages. And the ticket price includes a juice and a smoothie and, of course, lots of recipes and a lovely excuse for a meetup, really. So Tuesday, Feb 4th, you can go to thesoberclub.com and do the little drop down menu. Click on events and you'll see it there. Or you might pick it up on Facebook as well. It's called Let's Talk Detox and Getting the Buzz Without the Booze. Don't forget, my next retreat, if you want to get in quick, is 8th to the 10th of May at Inner Guidance in Suffolk. The last one sold out super quickly. So don't miss out on that opportunity if that's something that you like the idea of. There's yoga, meditation, a gong bath, lots of lovely walks. We're going to be doing some inspirational teaching sessions. Hopefully I'll be putting together something else at Champneys as well. I love being able to connect with people on this stuff. It's just amazing how, you know, this phrase, the opposite of addiction is connection. It really, really is. So look forward to meeting some of you on one of our events. And by the way, you know, I know I get these emails from people saying, oh, why can't you do something in Australia? Well, I really hope that that's going to happen at some point. And I did have one woman say, oh, I saw your retreat that you're doing. And can I have some more info? So I sent her the info and then she said, oh, no, on the pic it said spring retreat. And I thought you meant spring Texas. Next time, maybe. You never know. I will see you same time next week. Don't forget to check out Annie Grace's podcast, This Naked Mind, and you can hear more of my story on that. Oh, by the way, I forgot to tell you, I am also interviewing Catherine Gray for her great new book, The Unexpected Joy of the Ordinary. She's on BBC Radio 2 with us this week. And then obviously I had to borrow her for the podcast too. See you soon. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast. I'm Jenny Lee Grace. Please go to thesoberclub.com. Listen to more podcasts, read our blogs, enter our competitions, grab yourself a free PDF, Self-Care in Sobriety, and check out our online community,